To my mother and father. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. Winston Churchill, address to the House of Commons, June 4th, 1940. Many scenes have come and gone unwritten since it is today, the 4th September, a cold, gray, blowy day, made memorable by the sight of a kingfisher and by my sense, waking early, of being again visited by the spirit of delight. Rarely, rarely comest thou, spirit of delight. That was I singing this time last year, and sang so poignantly that I have never forgotten it, or my vision of a fin rising on a wide, blank sea. No biographer could possibly guess this important fact about my life in the late summer of 1926. Yet biographers pretend they know people. Virginia Woolf, Diaries, September 4th, 1927. Introduction. I know exactly when my obsession with Winston Churchill began. On a plane from New York City to Anchorage, while I was reading a World War II history that described a scene at Churchill's country house. Prime Minister Churchill, we learn, had standing orders that he was to be awakened before 8 a.m. only if Britain itself was invaded. Sometime after 8, one morning in 1941, Foreign Secretary Anthony Eden answered a knock by Churchill's valet, who presented him with a cigar on a silver tray. He said, "The Prime Minister's compliments, and the German armies have invaded Russia." Churchill, what a character! Not to be disturbed in sleep even for such extraordinarily good news for Britain, and then to celebrate by sending around a cigar with that wonderful message. The Prime Minister's compliments, and the German armies have invaded Russia. I wanted to read more. Like many people born after Churchill's death in 1965, I knew little about him. He'd been a great prime minister during that war, and he'd given a famous speech about this was their finest hour. And after Lady Astor snapped, "Winston, if I were your wife, I'd put poison in your coffee," he'd retorted, "Nancy, if I were your husband, I'd drink it." That was about the extent of my knowledge. I dog-eared the page to remind myself to track down a Churchill biography. But later at the library, the huge and often multi-volume biographies daunted me. And when I turned instead to read Churchill himself, I faced his 5-volume history of World War I, his 6-volume history of World War II, and his 4-volume history of the English-speaking peoples. I didn't know where to start. I wanted to know something about Churchill, but not everything about him. But I was lucky. I made just the right choice. Churchill's partial memoir, My Early Life. The man was a James Bond who'd actually lived, the hero of a novel that really happened. I was enthralled by Churchill's fantastic successes and failures, by his outsized character, and by his historic vision. And his writing was so masterful. I found myself rereading passages to savor his words. He wrote, "The senior officers consulted together. As so often happens when things go wrong, formalities were discarded, and I found myself taking part in the discussion." Of his obnoxious ambition as a young soldier, Churchill wrote, "The expressions medal hunter and self-advertiser were used from time to time, in a matter which would, I am sure, surprise and pain the readers of these notes. It is melancholy to be forced to record these less amiable aspects of human nature, which by a most curious and indeed unaccountable coincidence have always seemed to present themselves in the wake of my innocent footsteps." The book's closing paragraph was unforgettable. It read, "Events were soon to arise in the fiscal sphere which were to plunge me into new struggles and